Good morning and welcome to Community Matters. I'm here with Maya June Dwyer, who's the Associate Artistic Director at Breadcrumbs Productions, and she's currently the director of this wonderful show, Marie and the Nutcracker Prince. Good morning, Maya. How are you today?
I'm so excited to be speaking with you. I'm doing great.
Yeah, I'm excited too. So we've got this great show, Marie and the Nutcracker Prince, and it's happening at the Oneida Community Mansion House on Sunday, December 8th. Am I correct?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about it. What is it that's so interesting about Marie and the Nutcracker Prince?
So something that we have focused on at Breadcrumbs Productions in some of our shows is this concept of immersive theater. So Marie and the Nutcracker Prince basically takes the story of the Nutcracker that we kind of know and love and traces us back to the original novel that this is based on by E.T.A. Hoffman. And instead of sitting and watching a show, like you typically do, go into the audience and sit and just, you know, observe and then leave when it's done. With Marie and the Nutcracker Prince, we actually take the story through the entire venue. So with the Oneida Community Mansion House, we're exploring all the different bedrooms, and, you know, there are scenes that take place in, like, closets and things like that. And you have free rein as an audience member to follow any of the five characters that are part of it. So it's really kind of like being dropped into a film as opposed to like sitting and watching a play. So I think I'm really excited to explore, especially with this particular story, because it allows you to experiment with different perspectives and viewpoints that you kind of jump back and forth between as you experience the story, and you get to choose those for yourself as an audience member.
That's totally fascinating. So instead of sitting in a seat and watching a performance, you actually get to choose what type of performance you want to enjoy.
Exactly. So if you get bored with a scene, you can go find something else.
That's good. Well, this scene isn't working for me. Let's see what's happening in the closet.
Right. It's totally you craft your own narrative through the story, essentially. So it's like you are the camera.
So I'm interested to hear, what is it like for the actors? Are they putting on the same sort of scene time over and over and over again for a different audience, or does it sort of change from performance to performance?
Our piece is site adaptive, which means that it kind of blossoms in different ways from venue to venue. And this allows us to capitalize on the energy of the different spaces as well as the architecture of the different spaces, which is pretty special because it feels like the show, you know, grows and kind of morphs depending on where we go. That being said, there is like a set material that we have created that doesn't change. But what changes are like transitional moments in between scenes, you know, might take a different length of time depending on the space that we're in. So this allows a little bit of room for the actors to have a little bit of fun with the space and with the audience that's there. So there's like new moments that we find each time within the structure that is set. Yeah, so it's flexible, but there is a, you know, a set show that we have written and rehearsed many times that comes in and kind of morphs depending on the spaces that we're in.
It sounds like this could be a lot of fun for the actors. Like you'd said, it gives them some flexibility and some ability to kind of go with whatever's happening in this new environment. But is it strategically, is it difficult for set designers or people who are setting up in every new venue to figure out what the new layout is and how to make the play look like your vision is?
Yeah, so it's so much fun as an actor. I perform also in the piece, and it is just such an adventure. Like when I started doing this kind of touring immersive work, it was so terrifying because we'd come to a venue, have a couple hours to set up and block through the piece and make sure we all know where we're going at all times, because we need to lead the audience effectively through the story and, you know, give off the impression that we really know exactly where we're going.
Right.
But now that I've been doing it for a couple of years, I find it just so stimulating and so much more exciting than a traditional stage piece, because you have the opportunity to connect very intimately with people. And people always surprise you. Like there's a whole interesting kind of thing in immersive theater of like group psychology and how audiences choose to interact with stories is different every night. So from that perspective, it is just such a joy. It also does present challenges. Like for instance, there is no backstage. So the actors are constantly on. There's never a moment with it when, like what I actually love about it is that like in a traditional play, you might see like, you know, and Hamlet exits and then is not in the rest of the scene. But for us, you get to see where Hamlet goes. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So there's no, like, downtime for the actors, which is exhausting and very, you know, presents its own challenges. But it is very, you know, having the ability to have that complete character journey is, like, so cool. But from a, like, design perspective, we were really lucky last year. This is the second year we're doing this production. But this production has changed in that we've added two characters this year. But I really want to credit our original production designer, Andy Hughes, who created a flexible structure. And we go in, and the beauty of doing this work in these historical mansions and the fun of it is that, like, so much of the set is there. You know, we come into the space and that space becomes the setting of the story. So we have things we bring in, like we have a lot of lights and there's a lot of spectacle in that regard, you know, and we bring in our set dressing and our props and things like that. But there really is such a rich canvas already by coming into these spaces that are, you know, have their own aesthetic and their own history to them.
Sure.
Especially the United Community Mansion has a very crazy history. So it's very lovely to come into that space and, you know, be able to engage with the elements that exist there that, you know, the staff of the mansion know very well that we might use in a different way.
Right, and that's a really good point, because there's some people who might have visited the mansion before and know about its history, about the architecture that's there, and now they get to explore that space in a totally unique way.
Exactly. We come in when we do our site visits a couple months before the show. It's always funny because coming through, we're like, oh, can we use this closet? Can we use this weird stairwell? Can we use this space? And they're like, this is not what we expected. But it's fun to imagine, like, what this space, you know, bringing a piece like this. I always think about, like, the people who lived in this place. And, like, I really feel like it brings the audience through the venue in a new light, seeing it as a space that these characters are inhabiting. You know, like, there are moments where, you know, maybe we pass a mirror by in the hallway and a character, like, fixes their hair there or something like that. And you can think about how people were living and existing in this space and still currently do, actually, with the United Community Mansion live there. And,
right.
It just makes me think about the stories that exist and how we can kind of feel that energy of those stories.
So in a way, it's almost as if the venue itself becomes a character in the play itself.
Absolutely, and that's what makes it so fascinating to do this kind of site adaptive work, because, you know, we go to all different sorts of mansions and places, as well as performing at our home venue, Wunderbar in Syracuse. But each mansion has such a different history and a different architecture. You know, sometimes we're performing this piece all at the same level, like, you know, on one floor, and then there's other times, like when we were at the the name is escaping me now, but the Cortland venue that we were at, the 1890 house in Cortland,
right,
has, you know, four or five stories. So, like, there's, you know, sometimes when we're running up and down five flights of stairs, and that gives a very different energy to our character, you know, versus, like, a place where you're not having to do that. So it's like, very, very different every time.
And, I'm sure, yeah. Having to deliver a monologue after two flights of stairs, climbing two flights of stairs is probably its own challenge.
Yes, it was really, like, the first year we did this kind of touring work back with Christmas Carol that Tanner Effinger directed. The first year that Breadcrumbs existed, it was a very big wake-up call when we went to that venue, because we were like, oh, wow, okay. But it's, again, it's fascinating because it's, like, very, lends a different kind of urgency to the story. And the United Community Mansion, the first time we went there, this place is enormous. And so we were like, oh my gosh, how are we going to make our cues? You know, because there's moments when all the characters sort of are separate in different rooms and then magically appear in a room at the same time. And those kind of effects are challenging when you have venues that are, the shape and size is changing all the time. So, but it's a fascinating challenge. It's my favorite kind of work. So it's a real joy.
So getting back to what we were saying about the audience and their experience in all of this, is there... If you could give us some understanding, because I'm confident most people listening to this have never experienced this type of theater before. What are some recommendations you would make, or what are some do's and don'ts maybe for people who are coming to your show?
Sure. Right off the bat, I will say that there's no right or wrong way to experience this. So my suggestion is don't be afraid to break off from the people that you come with and follow your own personal instincts. In fact, it is very likely that you will lose the people you came with.
Wow.
There are moments when we do deliberately pull people apart from each other so that they can experience truly what they are interested in following. And when you're with, you know, your partner or when you're with a group of friends, you know, that becomes limited because you're eventually following whoever is leading your group.
Right.
But there's something really special about being able to just, like, follow your instincts. Like, oh, you're curious about what this letter says that was left on the table? Go up and read it. You want to stay in the room after all the characters have left? Sure, do that. And explore the set for a minute. Or do you want to voraciously follow only Marie or only Drosselmeyer? Do that. So I would really encourage audiences to be brave, and the more deeply you engage with the story, the more deep, there are so many layers of detail that we put into the props and the, you know, kind of the world. So I would encourage people to explore that as deeply as they would like to. Similarly, if you're the kind of person who is, not as interested in, like, you know, running after characters, usually there's at least one space that we create where something is always going on in that space. So, you know, that's another way to explore the story. So I would say wear comfortable shoes. Don't be afraid to go outside of your comfort zone. And just be curious. You know, we have this kind of idea of fortune favors the bold in immersive theater. So, you know, the more there are secrets to uncover. So be bold.
Now, do you encourage audience members to actively engage with the actors while they're performing?
Generally, what we say is it's kind of a thing of don't touch the actors unless they, you know, offer a hand or something like that. And though there are moments when the audience is engaged with directly, generally, there will be moments where if you, for instance, ask a character a question in the middle of the scene, they will probably stay engaged only with what they are doing.
Right.
But there's, you know, we guide the audience in terms of the level of interactivity depending on the scene. And I think our actors are pretty solid in their abilities to do that. Generally there's, the hope is that we're very clear with what we want from the audience. But again, the audience is encouraged to be adventurous. So we do have people like who come up to us and ask questions at various moments or, you know, one time I was reading, you know, we have this kind of thing we start with in the show called Urgent Worlds, where the characters are existing in their spaces and just kind of doing their everyday activities for a couple minutes. And that gives the audience a chance to begin to learn how to engage with things and become a little more comfortable with the idea of being such a voyeur. Like this kind of theater is incredibly voyeuristic.
Sure.
And that's really unusual. You know, you aren't usually in a situation where you can just like rifle through someone's drawer, right? But in this, we really encourage that kind of behavior because it's, you know, you'll gain a deeper understanding of the story and of a character if you more deeply engage with the world.
Well, that's really fascinating, and I love that you bring that up, that it's sort of this voyeuristic way of experiencing theater. I think that kind of titillates people. It makes them more interested in engaging in a part of themselves that they normally wouldn't.
Absolutely. And, I mean, what's really interesting is, like, occasionally we'll get a couple children coming to the show. It's not a child's production, right? It is a pretty dark retelling of The Nutcracker set in the Russian Revolution. So it is not really specifically for children. That being said, we've had children come to the show and really lead the adults because of the way that children are so able to be spontaneous and follow their instincts, right? We kind of tame that in ourselves as we grow up. But this is a situation where I'd really encourage everyone to get back to that childlike curiosity, you know, and follow your impulses. If a character runs out of a room, run after them if you want to. It is really lovely to see how different audiences interact with this. And, you know, something I'm really excited about is that we've been at the Oneida Community Mansion for 2 years now with this kind of work. So it's fun to see repeat visitors who come and like are more comfortable engaging with this format now and can kind of lead people in being spontaneous. And I'm hoping that this year we'll see even more of that kind of childlike adventurousness.
Do you have a recommendation for what an age appropriate you know, what age a child would be that would probably be best to bring?
Like I said, we were surprised last year to see a couple children at our show, because generally I would recommend it for, like, you know, 14 or 15 plus. But the children who came loved it and had such an amazing time. And some of the kind of more frightening elements, I think, went kind of over their heads. Like, we had children as young as 5 last year who came. But again, I wouldn't, you know, market it to children specifically.
Sure.
But I think, you know, it was surprising the way that they engaged with it. And that was kind of a wake-up call for us. So
beyond what might some might perceive as sort of a violent part of the play, is there anything else in this that would preclude children from coming?
There is a degree to which we play upon the idea of what is real. So, like, this idea that's present in the original Nutcracker of Marie not knowing what is a dream and what is reality. We take that to kind of an extreme level. So there are some sequences where she becomes really disoriented, and there are a couple, I don't know, I would say, like, it's just very different than, like, watching a movie.
Right.
You know, when you're in the environment, the goal is to make you feel like you are there in a, you know, in a frightening scene. That can be a lot for even adults, you know?
No, I see what you mean.
But it's also, like, very thrilling for kids, too. So, like, we had scenes last year that I expected. I was like, oh, no, the Mouse King scene is going to be so scary for these kids. But they were so into it and, like, really about it. So I don't really know how to speak to that. But, you know, there are elements of their, you know, this is set during the Russian Revolution. So there's moments where there's, you know, like, a protest or a heated argument between characters or, like, you know, heightened physicality and stuff like that. So I don't know. I would say generally, like, parents, use your judgment. If your child is easily spooked, then this might not be quite
sure.
The right thing. But if your child is very adventurous, you know, think about how your kid engages with Halloween, maybe.
No, right. No, that's a good touchstone, actually, for that. And if I'm following what you're saying, when you're watching a film or a TV show, it's easier to say, this is all fake. This, don't worry, son or daughter, this isn't
right.
Real. But when you're actually in the room with other real people and it's happening around you, it's a little more difficult to tell reality from the fiction.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that is the beauty of it in one way. Like, it is the only time, the first time I experienced immersive theater, I came away feeling like this was the closest I'd ever felt to being inside a dream. And to me, that was very thrilling because as a child, I was always reading books and wishing I was just in the story, you know, wishing I could just be in the story, not just, like, watch a film of it, you know. And this is, to me, the reason this medium is so thrilling is because you are inside the story. But for people who, like, for some people, that is not the dream. you know, it's not for everybody, and that's okay.
So it sounds like, based on what you've been saying here, that when people first arrive, you do sort of give them, what's the best way of putting it? Sort of a, hey, this is what you're going to experience tonight. This is a breakdown of what's going to happen. Some instruction, I guess, would be the best way to say it before the performance begins.
Yes and no. I mean, there's a degree to which we want to keep things very mysterious and unexpected. But there's also, you know, our artistic director, Tanner, will be there kind of welcoming audiences and, you know, giving them a heads up about certain things. We also have little signs that we post around that are guidance on how to engage with the story. But I think part of the, you know, we don't want to, you know, kind of scare or shock anyone. So
right.
we try to take good care of our audiences. But at the same time, there is something lovely about not, you know, holding some of the cards closer to our chest and, you know, letting it be unexpected and mysterious sometimes and letting people have to figure it out. You know, that's part of kind of the experience of it. So, but we keep our audience's health and well-being very much in mind when we create these pieces. And they're very thoughtfully created. So I would say that, you know, trust, you can trust us.
we can trust you. Good.
Yes. Well,
so if it starts at 6:30 p.m. and I'm looking at the website now and it says the show begins at 6:30 p.m. because it's sort of a, I'm just going to say choose your own adventure because I love that thought of it.
Yeah.
If it's this choose your own adventure theater experience, can you arrive at 7 p.m. and still feel like you've engaged in the play the way it was meant to be performed?
Ah, that's such a good question. I would say with this piece, maybe, but actually you'll, because it's only 90 minutes long, you'll miss certain elements that would be helpful for you to know. There's a couple of scenes that we begin with that give the audience kind of a primer for the action that's going to happen, where, you know, we see the reasons that characters will do things later. Is there's kind of a moment where all the action happens, kind of the inciting incident happens right at the beginning. So I would say that I would really encourage people to be in the world for as long as possible, actually. Saying that, we begin really with our urgent world, kind of like the world opens at 6:15.
Okay.
So people who get there early will get a chance to like explore the world ahead of time a little bit and maybe get a little bit of an extra sense of how things are going to work. So I would encourage people to come a bit early, if anything, to kind of get the full extent of the experience.
Now, in 90 minutes, do you think people could, is it really possible to see all aspects of what you've created here?
No, not at all. Like, in fact, you will never see all elements unless you come 5 times.
Wow.
Because there's 5 different tracks to the story. So all the characters have their own independent tracks that overlap at times, and there are moments when we bring the whole audience together. So there are scenes that everyone will see, and then there's scenes that only one person will see. So it's very, some people find that frustrating in this idea of FOMO or fear of missing out. And that's kind of the reality of immersive theater, is that there's always going to be more to see. But the joy of that is that, you know, when you reconnect with your partner or your friends or, you know, whoever you've come with, if you've come with people, at the end you might be like, oh my gosh, this one scene where this person pulled me into a closet and told me this secret was crazy. And then, you know, someone else might be like, that's wild. Well, you did that. I was seeing this other crazy thing. And then it's like, oh, these are connected somehow. And, you know, so it's just, I just find this so thrilling.
And now you've created an opportunity for people to share something that they experienced alone and build past what they saw in the theater itself.
Yeah, I mean, we have people who, you know, when we do this show, come to multiple performances to get more of the story. But it really does, it is a very conversation starting piece. There's a lot in there, and it's, I think there's a lot of, you know, the problems in the story are very, very layered. And there's, you know, what I love about this medium is that, like, it allows us to explore, for instance, the idea of revolution, which is so present in this story, from multiple perspectives. And it's rare to get to have conversations that are really examining thoroughly many different perspectives, especially in a time when, like, we're quick to make judgments.
Right. Now, you said that you've got this beginning scene that sort of sets the stage, no pun intended, for the rest of the experience. Is there a culminating scene that sort of ties things together for people who might have seen different things?
Yes. So we basically, like, no matter what you see, you'll be tracing something, your own narrative through the story, right? And those narratives all come together at the end. They all have their own, each character goes through an arc. You know, they are not the same in the beginning and the end of the story. They're not the same person, you know? So we have a beginning and an ending that they all fit into somehow, but you'll know their independent arcs depending on what you've seen.
So you might be watching that final scene and see a character at the end that you never followed be a completely different character from the beginning scene.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this story really centers around this idea of kind of independence being kind of the culmination for especially Marie. So I think, like, all the characters have these kind of fleshed out narratives that are very, very fascinating to see. And something that we've added this year is that E.T.A. Hoffman, we've added 2 new characters, one being E.T.A. Hoffman, who wrote The Nutcracker. So he's engaging with his story and his characters. And for the most part, they can't see him, which is kind of fascinating. And we've also added the character of the Tsarina, Alex, who you know, interacts with the story in a different way too. So there's even more possibility this year for seeing kind of the full world. And like, it's very different if you're seeing the world from the perspective of the author versus the perspective of a character in that narrative, you know? I'm very excited to bring this kind of new edition of this piece, which really is the more connected to what originally the vision was for
right.
the piece. So I'm very excited to see how that manifests itself. It's all a big experiment always.
And adding two new characters, as you said, it really proves the point that you had made that this is such a flexible production. So flexible, in fact, that you can just throw in new characters and still into the story. You know, any other play, you have a script and that's your script and those are your characters and it doesn't change and it can't change because it doesn't, the story is the structure. Mm. But here, the world is the structure and that can be as broad as you make it.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, something to think about is that, like, you know, the original, when Tanner Effinger and I conceptualized this last year, we talked about doing this as a four-person production. So last year we had the characters of Drosselmeyer Marie and the Revolutionary, and then we also had a fourth character who was kind of an ambassador between the audience and the story. But the original conception of this piece, we talked about including E.T.A. Hoffman, and we talked about briefly including the Queen. So this is kind of returning to our original idea, but now that we have kind of the ability to add these two new characters in, it's like we took what we created last year and expanded it, basically. The piece has also been expanded from 60 to 90 minutes. So we really do build on the original structure that we created, but it's, you know, with creating original work, the first time you stage it isn't generally going to be the final product. So this is an expansion and a development of a work that we began creating last year. But it's exciting, I think, for audiences who saw it last year. I'm hoping that they'll come back and be able to experience it because they'll have some background. But so it's very exciting to have the opportunity to return to it and expand it. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to do that because you don't always have that opportunity
right.
with creating new work. So.
Well, Maya, we've only got a few minutes left, and I want to make sure we get a chance to get to know you a little bit. You're the associate artistic director for this production company. You're the director of this piece, and you're also an actor in the piece. I mean, you've got a wide range of talent. How is it that you came into theater, and how is it that you came to want to do this particular production?
My interest in theater began when I was very little. I kind of was just always doing it as long as I remember, whether just like in my living room with my sister, or I got involved from an early age in a couple different things, one being Gifford Family Theater through Le Moyne College, where they needed a child to play a child's role in something. So I auditioned for that and ended up doing that. And that gave me the opportunity from an early age to be working with college students and professionals, and that really shaped my development. Throughout my life, I've always bopped back and forth between theater and music and dance, and I'm over the past like 3 or 4 years have really started to explore how those actually can support each other and interweave. And so I would describe my focus as very collaborative and interdisciplinary. I came to start working in immersive theater. The first immersive production I did actually was with a different company that doesn't exist anymore, the Covey Theater Company run by Gary Heater. And we did a play that was set in the Barnes Hiscock Mansion in Syracuse. It wasn't quite the same as this like format that I now like to explore, where the audience has choice in terms of what they see, but it was similar in that the audience was led through a specific storyline together through a non-traditional venue. Really, my development of my work in immersive theater came when Tanner Effinger came to Syracuse and started Breadcrumbs, and finding someone who had a similar interest in it was really key for me in like figuring out how to develop my own opportunities to create my own work. And we came to Nutcracker sort of together after working. I was in Christmas Carol, the first immersive tour that we did the previous year, and he directed that and I was just a performer. And then we started developing Nutcracker together, and he asked me if I would be interested last year in directing it, which was just a really key, it was sort of the first professional thing that I had directed, and it was just a really wonderful, very challenging experience and something that I really appreciate having had the opportunity to work on. I love working in a collaborative setting, and it's kind of important to know that this piece was devised last year by a group of people. It wasn't just kind of my own vision.
Right.
So Talon Larham and Andy Hughes and Tanner Effinger and I created this as a group, and that was the original kind of group of people. And now the group has changed that's working on it. But Tanner is still on board sort of in a co-directing role this year, which is nice because as a performer in the piece, you know, it's hard for me to direct those scenes that I'm a part of. So he's been pretty invaluable in that regard.
That's great. Well, just as we're wrapping up here, give us some information about where people can go to pick up tickets for this great production that you have for us.
Yeah, tickets can be found both, I think, through the Oneida Community Mansion website, but also on our website, breadcrumbsproductions.com. If you go to the tab that says currently, you'll find a whole page dedicated to Nutcracker where you can watch a little video from the show last year and look at all the different venues we're attending. But tickets for the Oneida Community Mansion are linked to that page. Yeah, so that's kind of where you can go to figure it out.
Perfect. Maya June Dwyer, we're so glad to have you here with us. Thankful for all that you've kind of expanded my mind and what immersive theater is. And I'm looking forward to seeing the show. One last thing. If you had one piece of advice for everybody who's coming to the show, what would it be?
Follow your heart.
Follow your heart. Well said. Maya, thank you very much. Have a wonderful morning.
Thank you.